from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their 6 pools on 3 different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
It's time now to go beyond the headlines, and for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Oh, good morning, everybody. A happy Thursday to you, the best day of the week. I'm Kyle, he's James. We're hanging out with you until noon. We have so much stuff to get into today. We got NBA draft. We've got some Kings offseason. We have some wild NBA coaching news to get to. And, of course, we would be remiss if we were a sports talk radio show who was off yesterday and did not mention the passing of a baseball giant, literally and figuratively, Willie Mays. Died at the age of 93 on Tuesday. And man, this was one of those celebrity deaths that hit me in a little bit different way. Like when Bill Walton died, that hits, it's like, man, that's devastating. And you see all the stories about it, like, man, that is just what a remarkable life. But with Willie Mays specifically, he played in the era of baseball that is my favorite era to read and learn about.
Oh, yeah, me too.
That like, post-World War II through the 60s era, really just kind of integration and beyond, is my favorite era of baseball. And everything you read about Willie Mays, whether you read the biography by Hirsch, whether you read 24, which is written by John Shea, there was a gravity to Willie Mays that was just different. That Joe DiMaggio, all-time megastar, Mickey Mantle, same deal. Pick a player, Ted Williams, same deal. But Willie Mays just had a gravity to him where you had people like Ted Williams talking about, like, yeah, man, that guy was just born to play baseball. Like, there's never been anybody better. And it felt like in reading about him, you just kind of like knew him. And his death, especially with the Giants playing at Rickwood Field tonight, where he got his start as a professional ball player for the Birmingham Black Barons back in 1948. That was a lot. It was a lot to take in all at once.
Yeah, I feel like we've lost over the last 2 months, we've lost 3 giants in the sports world, whether it's Bill Walton or Jerry West and now Willie Mays. And I grew up like a baseball card collector, and I took in as much as I could in the baseball world. Like, it's something that I like grew up on the numbers, and just such an incredible player. Just like, the stats speak for themselves, but I mean, like, 24-time All-Star?
24 times.
24-time All-Star.
He was an All-Star 24 times. He played enough years to be an All-Star 24 times.
It's just absolutely amazing. And then on top of that, like, I think by living to 93, he became like such a living legend that was, you know, sort of like mm-hmm. dragging everybody back to that time. Like, you know, Mickey Mantle died years ago, mm-hmm. like 30 years ago.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of the greats of that era have been gone.
Mm-hmm.
But for Willie Mays to be probably the best all-around baseball player of all time.
Yeah.
And it, I mean, it's debatable. Like, you could go back and look at other guys. Again, like, I grew up a Mickey Mantle guy.
Sure.
My uncle was a huge Mickey Mantle guy. I saved mm-hmm. newspaper clippings from, you know, the Grass Valley Union
yeah.
Of Mickey Mantle stuff. I have them.
That's sick.
Like, so, like, a lot of that stuff, so I grew up with that. But at the same time, like, these are the two giants of that era.
Yeah.
And just incredible for him to not only be, I mean, he just became such a an ambassador for the game, an ambassador for the Giants.
Mm-hmm.
And his stats are just, like, off the charts.
Yeah, the fact that he finished, like, 660 home runs, like, 660 is just a number that everybody knows.
Yep.
And the fact that, I love one of my favorite Willie Mays stories is the one where somebody asked him how many home runs he would have hit if he hadn't played at Candlestick Park. Because he played so many years with that howling wind at Candlestick. And he said, how many home runs would you have hit if you didn't play in that ballpark? And he said, 800. And it sounds crazy, but then you go see what he did and you hear the stories. Again, I was not around. So you read about what he did and you hear people who were there talk about it. And it's like, that doesn't sound outlandish anymore.
Yeah.
And then he was as good as he was defensively. And it wasn't the incredible thing about Willie Mays and the books that have been written about him. I mean, he was always very accessible. Go, if you have not read 24 by John Shea, do it. It is John Shea writing, like, in conjunction with Willie Mays and transcribing direct conversations with Mays. It's amazing. But you start to see in a way that you don't really get to with DiMaggio or with Mantle or pick a great player.
Mm-hmm.
The thought process that went into how he approached at bats, how he played defense, and the fact that because he was so fast and so instinctual that he could play more shallow because he could then get back on balls and he could rob base hits and take away hits. And then he had this incredible arm, like he always talks about with the catch, the famous one over his shoulder at the Polo Grounds. I was more proud of the throw back into the infield.
Yeah.
Because there were runners on base and that throw kept runners from advancing. And just a remarkable player. Thankful that the Giants will be playing at Rickwood Field tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And getting to really honor Willie Mays in the way that he deserves to be honored. That'll be amazing.
Yeah, it's really sad that he didn't make it to Rickwood Field for this.
Yeah,
because I think that was the plan, at least at some point. But you know, again, these things happen, and
yeah,
you know, 93 years old. It's an amazing life filled with amazing accomplishments and. Yeah, just, you know, people are bringing up and he was Barry Bonds' godfather.
Yeah.
Like he's a guy who just sort of had the pulse, especially in mm-hmm. San Francisco. You know, you've got the amazing statue out front and everything mm-hmm. else. Yeah, just a wonderful, wonderful baseball player.
He, forgive the cheesy phrase here, but this is what he captured hearts and minds, right? In the way, on both coasts. Because of the Giants' move from New York to San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
and did so at a time where he could not buy a house in the neighborhood he wanted to buy a house in San Francisco because he was a black man, and he persevered through it.
Yeah,
and he overcame that, and the fact that he went to this new city and had that happen where he's having trouble buying the house when he is the superstar in the area. He's the biggest star on the West Coast and just used it, went out, eventually got a house in San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
but went out and still put together the best career that we've ever seen for me, for any outfielder. All due respect to Bonds, Ken Griffey Jr.,
Mickey Mantle. Willie Mays, to me, is the kind of player who transcends eras. And man, hell of a life for him, man.
Yeah, I think he not only transcends eras, but really takes, like, as baseball integrates,
mm-hmm.
he's the one that jumps off the page that becomes like the star of an
yeah.
era.
Yeah, yeah.
As you're transitioning, you're trying to normalize, you're trying to like sort of bring along everybody into the
right.
the new normal that is the baseball world. He is the star of that era. And yeah. I mean, you had others for sure. Like, you know, Roberto Clemente was incredible during that era. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of other players that just stand out that were giants in that era as well. But yeah, his accomplishments stand above everybody else. And again, it says a lot that he still has records. You know, mm-hmm. there are still records that Willie Mays holds. And the fact that he was able to be such an incredible two-way player, you know,
mm-hmm.
and he stole bases, he had home runs, he did everything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even his run totals were like unbelievable. He yeah, scored man. Over 2,000 runs.
Yeah.
And that's wild. Just like
an incredible base runner.
Yeah.
Not only super fast, but super instinctual.
Yeah. 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 Just absolutely amazing.
Yeah. So Willie Mays, dead at 93. But I don't think anybody will ever stop talking about Willie Mays in the context of all time great San Francisco Giants, Major League Baseball players. He is one of one. And we are, Man.
Yeah. Tough. I also, you know, we talked about this the other day about the logo, right? Jerry West and the logo.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a renewed conversation about this over the last couple of days,
mm-hmm.
whether the catch, Willie Mays catch, should be used as the Major League Baseball logo.
Mm.
And I thought that makes a lot of sense. Like the over the shoulder glove out.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's like a still that you could actually use. I actually have a shadow box in the bar
mm-hmm.
with a Willie Mays autographed baseball and a
Sick.
Plaque and little and a picture of the catch.
That's really, really cool.
Yeah. So
yeah, man. If they did that, I wouldn't be mad at all. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah.
The Giants face the Cardinals tonight at Rickwood Field. That is where Willie Mays first played professional baseball with the Birmingham Black Barons back in 1948. If you get a chance, even if you're not a big baseball fan, tap into that game tonight, even just for a little bit. It's going to be a celebration of baseball in a way that I don't think we've really ever seen on that kind of stage, where it's just all eyes on a place where guys like Willie Mays played, Josh Gibson, Hank Aaron, Joe DiMaggio. Like, pick a great player.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very strong chance they played at least a little bit at Rickwood Field, whether it was for spring training or on a barnstorming tour or in the Negro Leagues, whatever it is. But make sure to check that out, because Major League Baseball is now doing the right thing in tying in the Negro Leagues as major leagues
mm-hmm.
and tying in those stats into Major League Baseball stats and changing the record books and doing all that. And finally honoring those players in a way that they didn't get to be honored when they were playing. So, that's, I think, what the presentation of this game at Rickwood Field is going to be about. So definitely tap into that. It's going to be a ton of fun. The Giants and Cardinals playing there tonight out in Birmingham. I'm going to say Birmingham because we're in the United States. I'm not going Birmingham. Mm. Sorry. I can't okay. do it. That's what they say in England. Birmingham.
Yeah. I wonder how the locals, they call it Birmingham.
I cannot imagine they say Birmingham.
Okay.
I can't. Like Tommy Shelby calling it Birmingham. Like they're not doing that out there. No chance. All right. We have a ton of other stuff to get to today. We have some crazy NBA coaching news. We have a couple of more mock drafts. And we've talked a lot about the NBA draft and the Kings moving their pick. But I'm starting to come around on two players who have been mocked to the Kings.
Okay.
I'm starting to come around on the idea. And we'll talk about that as well. He's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insiders. We're sponsored by Jiffy Lube. We're hanging out with you until noon on a Thursday on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader. Oops. That's fine. I didn't have my buttons on. There we go. I'll have my buttons in a second. Hey, voice guy, can you intro us?
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Shout out to the voice guy. Appreciate it. That's James. I'm Kyle. All right, so yesterday, just sitting there hanging out, did some yard work. You know, we just got our backyard done, so we're now landscaping it. We got concrete and grass. Now we're doing landscaping. And I got a notification that Monty Williams got fired on June 19th. They just fired the Pistons. Went, nah, a week before the draft. Get him out of here. We're done with this.
I think it's the draft is one thing, but a week and a half before free agency starts, 2 weeks before free agency starts. What are you doing?
I don't know what. Look, so they still owe him 5 years and $65 million, which, that contract to begin with was insane. Monty Williams is a fine coach, but paying him, what was it? Was it 6 and 76? 6 and 77?
76, 78.
Whatever it was.
It was a lot.
It was so much money for an NBA head coach who's pretty good. He's fine.
I mean, he took the Suns to the finals, right?
Yeah. And then I know he kind of punted on this year and clearly only took the job because they were offering him so much money. But if you knew that he was done, if you knew that you were done with him, why are you not doing it the day your season ends? This should have happened in April.
I don't understand any of what just happened.
I have no idea.
Again, like there are people who watched that team blamed him for a lot of things this
yes,
season.
Right.
Like they acted like he just had no idea what he was doing. Even is it Asura Thompson that's there?
Yeah.
Or is it Amon?
I think it's Asura Thompson there.
Whoever it is, whichever Thompson twin is there, just limited him like throughout the season. And when he did start rolling, he benched him. Asura. Yeah. I think that's one of the things that stood out, that you had a kid who started to roll and then all of a sudden you pulled back on him. I don't know. It's one of the strangest things I've ever seen, because look, they broke the bank with this guy. They changed the entire coaching salary structure with this guy.
Yeah.
Like every other owner in the league has got to be looking at the Pistons, the Gore family, right?
Yeah.
And just like, why did you do this to us?
Dude,
you ruined it.
It's the Deshaun Watson fully guaranteed $230 million.
Yeah.
Like, hang on, stop. Why did that happen?
Yeah, especially the dude hasn't even played in a year.
Right.
Like, what are we doing?
And Monty Williams, is not like he's won six titles.
No, and
it's not like you were going to win anything.
Yeah, you had no chance. Yeah. Like, I understood the six-year deal.
Sure.
Because you wanted to give him time to build this thing up.
Yes.
Why did you fire him after what? Like, what changed so dramatically? I guess being around him, that could change things greatly.
Sure.
And maybe you're just like, I don't want to work with this guy anymore.
Yeah.
Clearly, that's part of it. But they got rid of Troy Weaver. They're turning over everything. And it's just, to me, that's a huge investment. You're going to pay this guy $13 million a year for the next 5 years.
Yeah.
I don't think they just wrote him one big fat check. They're going to pay him yearly.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, is just absolutely insane, especially since you have a young group of players that needed stability. And while I've never been a huge Monty Williams fan, either in person or just as a coach, I think he's been overrated throughout his career. That doesn't mean that he's not at least like a leader of young men, because you've seen that throughout his career, where he's been able to take younger teams and help them mature and help them get to a certain point. This is just kind of out of left field, and I don't know.
I have no idea. Were they talking to free agents or agents of free agents? Talking to agents of free agents. And those guys are going, hey, not no chance of Monty Williams there.
Well, that to me is wild, because you know the one guy that they've been rumored to be after.
Who's that?
Malik Monk.
Huh.
And so for me, I'm like,
Hey, real quick, I want to put a pin in the Malik Monk thing briefly.
Yeah.
the first thing that came into my mind, because anytime an NBA thing happens, my brain goes to like, hey, how does this affect the Kings, or does it affect the Kings? I am so happy that this happened when it did and not before Mike Brown's contract got done.
Oh, yeah.
Because I am almost certain there would have at least been a phone call to Monty Williams. I don't know that, but I just, had that happened on April 14th or whenever the last game was, 14th, I think.
Yeah.
If that had happened on April 14th, I am almost certain that there would have been a call to Monty Williams.
It's crazy. You don't see a lot of that in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I watch soccer. Mm-hmm. Like, Manchester United has been trying to decide on what they're going to do with their coach, Eric Ten Hag, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
Ten Hag is crazy.
T-N-H-A-G, like two separate words.
Got it.
So they've been sitting here mulling over. They have new ownership that came in about 25% of the club from the Glazers. So they're like, are we going to keep him or are we not going to keep him? A disastrous season, more home losses than any time in the last like 100 years. I don't know what it is. Like the records are like really bad, right? Mm-hmm. And they're trying to decide. And while they're trying to decide, they had literally interviewed like three or four other coaches. They're like, okay, well, if we do get rid of him, at least we're going to have a list of candidates.
Right.
And then they ended up keeping him after interviewing.
That's so awkward.
They had even like a couple of guys are like, yeah, I've decided to pull out of the running for the Manchester United job. They're like, yeah, bro, first of all, they still have a head coach.
Yeah.
Number one. Number two, I don't think that they wanted you anyways.
Yeah.
But it's like this weird thing where, you know, players are allowed to go negotiate with other teams, and then your team then goes to that team and says, hey, we want $80 million transfer mm-hmm. fee. And they're like, no, we don't want to pay that. We want to pay $53 million. They're like, nope, we're not going to take. And they'll go back and forth. And sometimes they go, all right, well, we're done dealing with you. We're not going to take a transfer fee. And so the player, after he's negotiated a new contract with somebody else, has to go back to his other club. It's the most bizarre thing I've ever seen.
That's very odd.
But it kind of, like what you're talking about, like how many, like what do the Lakers do now? Do the Lakers look at Monty Williams and go, huh, hang on a sec. J.J. Redick is a perfectly fine podcaster, but should I look at Monty Williams and maybe I can get a deal? Maybe Monty Williams will take $5 million a year because he's getting paid $13 million from somebody else and all of a sudden he's like uber wealthy. I don't know.
Man.
He didn't want the job in the beginning, Kyle.
So I didn't think Malik Monk was going to be a Detroit Piston anyway, unless they threw like a max contract at him, but I don't think they were going to do that. Now I think it's off the table. I don't think anybody's going to be interested in going and playing there. Like, what a mess.
No, I think it is a horrible mess, and you need to recover very quickly. Like, if you did this, you better have had a plan.
They have to hire a coach like today.
Yeah, in the next like 2 or 3 days, they need to figure that out.
Correct.
But this is the strangest thing that I've, because it, again, it's so late. It's so late for them to do something like this.
I don't.
And look, if.
What? I need to know what happened. I need whoever the lead beat writer for the Pistons is. I need the James Hamm of Detroit to get the TikTok of what happened here.
Yeah.
Not the TikTok social media, like the minute by minute.
Yeah, the minute by minute breakdown
of how this happened. I need to know. I don't care that much. I do care. But from the standpoint of like, I need the tea. Did Monty Williams walk in one day for a pre-draft meeting and was like, this guy sucks. I don't want to draft this guy.
Yeah.
Did he curse somebody out? I don't know.
It's all very strange.
It's the timing too. If they had fired him on April 15th, it would have been like, oh man, it sucks they paid him that much, but it makes sense. He bit the bullet. He actively sabotaged his own team last year. He's not the right guy. But they didn't do that. So it's like, oh, okay, they're going to give Monty a second year. They're going to hopefully, you know, bring in some veterans and figure out the direction they're going to go with their roster. Okay, yeah, I kind of like the idea.
Yeah.
But now they're in a bad place, man. They're in a really bad place.
Well, and if I'm Malik Monk, and this was one of the options.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think right now people keep saying, like, San Antonio, although I keep doing the math on San Antonio, I don't understand why people keep saying San Antonio.
They would have to shed salary at some point.
Yeah, they would have to totally clear space.
Yeah.
So between San Antonio and Orlando, and then you throw in Detroit, like, was coming in hot. Like, they're coming in hot. And so maybe Monty Williams said, I don't want to coach Malik Monk. I don't think that's the case, but maybe it's something weird like that, but...
That'd be nuts.
And they're like, look, we're all in on this free agent, and we're sitting here courting him, and we're going to give him, you know, $30 million a year. Maybe that's the problem. And they're like, if you can't coach him, then we don't want you here. But I don't think that...
That would, like, be correct. I cannot imagine that.
This is totally bizarre. It's like out of left field. And if I'm Malik Monk and his agent, and his brother plays a big role in what he does and all that stuff, like, that team already had, I mean... They won 93 games over the last 5 years combined.
Ooh.
5 years combined.
The Celtics won like 82 this year.
Yeah. It's like 20, 20, 23, and then 16 and 14 or something, like 17 and 14.
And they lost the most games ever in a row.
Yeah. And they just have young talent. That's all they have. And who knows what that young talent will become.
And so there's Jalen Duren. Really good player.
Love him.
Front court player. But then it's like Cade Cunningham, ball dominant guard. A big guard, but a guard.
Yeah.
Jaden Ivey, ball dominant guard. And you want to bring in Malik Monk?
Yeah.
That's the move?
Totally bizarre.
I can't imagine Malik Monk had anything to do with this.
No. I don't think so either. But I also, I don't understand. Like, look, there's going out and getting more money. I get it. Mm-hmm. Go get your money. Like, yeah. I'm all for Malik to, right. Just like De'Aaron Fox, go get your bag. It's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to be selective. You don't want to be stuck in basketball hell for the next 4 or 5 years of your career and just wither away in a.
But like actual basketball money. Hell.
Yeah, just because of the money. Yeah. No, it is.
I mean, like I said, if they're throwing a max at him, then hard to blame him. But what a mess Detroit is.
Yep.
We'll have more Kings offseason stuff coming up for you, and we'll have good idea about idea coming up a little bit later. And the Ringer's top 100 NBA players in the 23-24 season have been updated. We'll discuss that as well right here on ESPN 1320. We're on Sacramento Sports Theater.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex Grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
That guy over there is James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're hanging out with you until noon. Now that we're caught up from our day off, we will move on to some Kings offseason stuff. I was reading a couple of mock drafts today because that's kind of what you do this time of year.
Mm-hmm.
And the two players going to the Kings, one of them in the ESPN, in an ESPN mock. ESPN actually did a two-round mock where they draft a player from UNC named Harrison Ingram.
Which is the most...
Just a perfect combination of names there.
Especially if you could trade for Brandon Ingram without giving up Harrison Barnes, and you had Brandon Ingram, Harrison Barnes...
And Harrison Ingram. Ooh.
That would be a nightmare.
But the first round picks in a mock draft by ESPN and a mock draft by The Athletic, Sam Vecenie did a mock. I don't want to say coming around on the idea of the Kings using their draft pick, but I'm starting to see the case for these two guys specifically.
Okay.
When I've been kind of out, and it's not, like I said, I would still, if Monty McNair called right now at 916-909-1320, 916-909-1320, if you want to get in on the conversation. If he called right now and said, hey, should we use the pick or trade the pick? I've got this deal for a starting caliber wing on the table involving the 13th pick. It's like, yeah, then move it.
Mm-hmm.
But the first player in the ESPN draft going to the Kings is Ron Holland, G League Ignite, athletic wing, really good defender, versatile defender, got to round out his offensive game a little bit, particularly as a shooter. But I think you can make a pretty decent case that the Kings are a good spot for him, assuming a trade is not on the table. Again, I'm of the mind that the Kings should trade the pick instead of use it. But if there's not a trade out there,
mm-hmm.
that makes sense for them, and Ron Holland falls to them at 13... I think that's a player where, hey, we think we can use him mm-hmm. as a kind of do-everything defender, switchable defender right away. He can play defensively in the NBA tomorrow. Now, he has to round out his offensive game. He's got to figure that out. But I think the Kings would offer him a system and a space where he wouldn't necessarily need to be a shot creator and shot maker. He could be... could hang out in the dunker spot. He could be a cutter, a slasher. He might have to knock down a corner three here and there, but it wouldn't be like a primary reason he's on the court.
Okay. So I like him as a prospect,
mm-hmm.
right? And if the Kings were in a different position, or if the Kings could go out and acquire a couple of players right now
mm-hmm.
to help them, like, fill up the rotation
mm-hmm.
and really like take a big step. Let's just say that the Kings were able to go out and trade for, let's say, Kyle Kuzma.
Okay.
But they, in trading for Kyle Kuzma, they did not give up the 13th pick in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
I would be okay with Ron Holland in that situation because
okay.
I think that in that situation, if you're going to have sort of a, like a packed front court, he's 18 years old. And I don't know, like, again, we saw him at the G League level, and he played against grown men, and he averaged 19.5 points and 6.7 rebounds and 2.9 assists, right? All of those are impressive. His three-point shooting was all over the board, but, like, overall, you see the outline of, again, one of the guys I kind of compare, like, some of the game to is Kuminga.
Mm-hmm.
But he's young, and he's raw, and he's not even at draft time. He won't even be 19.
Mm-hmm.
And the Kings, where they're at in their build, I just, your asset as a number 13 pick versus how long it's going to take for him to get there is really difficult to weigh. And I'm sure somewhere they have algorithm for this, right? Mm-hmm. They have this is who we project him to be, and this is how long we think it's going to get there. Mm-hmm. And this is what the 13th pick can get us, and this is what we think we can get.
Sure, sure.
But it's tough to imagine him being like a good fit unless the Kings go out and get somebody who's a starting quality caliber player, because I don't want Ron Holland stepping on the court for a year, really,
at all
at the NBA level. Maybe 5 minutes a game here and there, but I would rather see him in the G League. He can come up and play 15 or 20 games over the course of the season, but I just don't think he's even close to where he's gonna be as a player. And we talked about the stats, like, was he 6'6" and a half without shoes? He's listed at like 6'7 3/4" on all the websites, but 6'10 3/4" wingspan. Mm-hmm. He posted a 38-inch max vert. Like, all of these things are really intriguing to me. And the fact that he wasn't a good defender at the G League level, but he was known as a crazy defender at the high school level, super aggressive, that to me is at least intriguing. And if you're going to like really strip it down and say, okay, this is who you're going to be, you're just going to be a spot up shooter in the corner, a guy who gets out on a break and maybe scores, and a guy who maybe every once in a while gets a back cut or goes in, flies in for a rebound and dunks it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if that's who he can be, but even still, like, I like him as that a year from now or 2 years from now. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I like him as that in year one, because I don't even know that he can be as reliable as Kessler Edwards in year one. And that's sort of where I'm at. Like, again, I like him, and he's one of the guys that jumps off the page. Like, if you watch his, his first year at the G League, hey, look, he went up against grown men and averaged 19.5 and almost 7.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. And the assist numbers, like almost 3 assists a game.
Mm-hmm.
Those all show me that he's got like a lot of potential.
Yeah.
But potential, when you're trying to get back to the playoffs, is like a 4-letter word. Like, it is. It's one of those, like, I want to see productivity. I don't want to see potential. And that's, I believe that's also how the Kings usually their thought process. Like,
I'm stuck on potential as a 4-letter word.
Yeah, it's like, bleep. Like, it doesn't mean anything. Potential means nothing.
Oh, okay. I had the wrong 4-letter word, but if it's a different one, okay, now it makes a little more sense.
Yeah, it really does mean nothing.
Sure.
When you're a team who's trying to get to...
Sure.
2 years from now, that potential could become productivity.
Mm-hmm.
But for right now, you're still waiting on the potential of Keegan Murray, and you're sort of intrigued by the potential of Keon Ellis. And those are both young players that you're going to put a lot of stock into. And if you're a team who is good and trying to become great, it's okay to have one or two of those guys. What it's not okay is to have 3 or 4 or 5 of those guys, which is why we hear a lot of people saying the Kings are likely to trade this pick before they actually use it. I mean, I'll just give you, like, for example, Christian Brown and Watson, right?
Peyton Watson.
For
the Nuggets.
For the Nuggets. Mm-hmm. They're the guys who they're like giving a little bit of a leash to. They're saying, okay, we're going to give you some of our minutes and you've got to earn whatever else.
Mm-hmm.
And a guy like Zeke Nnaji, who is kind of in that same bucket, doesn't really get those minutes.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, we're not that comfortable with 3 of them on the court at one time. We would rather have veterans on the court versus young players. And that's kind of where the Kings are. They're that same exact age range where most of your players are between 25 and 28, and that core needs support in the right way, like, now.
Well, and that's why, like I said, if the Kings called and asked, should we use the pick or trade it, I'm advocating for trading it.
Of course.
But in the event that they're sitting there at 13 and one of these players falls to them, I think I see the vision with Ron Holland now more than I did a week ago or 2 weeks ago. That said, I think if Ron Holland is there at 13, I think there would be a team willing to move an asset to acquire that pick.
Well, I agree with you. I think he's a player that somebody out there is going to fall in love with. And I'll just keep putting this name out there. Like, for me, Kuminga is one guy, but also Gerald Wallace is it, where the Kings got to a point where they had so many players that were already rotational players and really good players that they were able to go draft a guy like Gerald Wallace and just take a flyer on a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually it worked out for Gerald because he got to learn the game from a bunch of pros.
Yeah.
But he had to go somewhere else to actually get on the court.
Yeah.
And that's going to be the tough thing.
A big thing for the Kings this year is something you have to add rotational pieces, and that's where trading the pick comes in. It's also where the Athletics mock draft, Sam Vecenie, friend of the program, his pick makes a little more sense to me.
Okay.
Or even more sense to me, I should say. He has Rob Dillingham, the point guard from Kentucky, going to the Kings. And he mentions that in the event that Malik Monk walks in free agency,
mm-hmm.
a player like Dillingham would make a lot of sense. And that is the caveat to this. I think if you lose Malik Monk and you're trying to figure out a way to replace him, I would rather take Rob Dillingham, number 13 overall, and then go find a cheap, like, steady point guard who can, if Dillingham is a mess, just a guard who can handle the basketball a little bit.
Okay.
If Dillingham is a mess and just cannot, it's like, oh my God, this guy is not an NBA player. He cannot figure it out. He's not going to figure it out this year. Then you have another guard who can step on the floor and be that guy. But man, I was doing a little research on Dillingham today, and I think he can play. He like really, really play and be a Malik Monk type of player. And it's not just because he wore number zero at Kentucky. I think he's going to be really, really good, really, really quickly. And I think he could fill that Malik Monk role like almost perfectly.
I agree that he's that style of player for sure. Whether or not he can transition to the NBA and have instant success, I don't know. I think it does help him that at Kentucky he came off the bench. And so he is more like, that's sort of who he's been for at least the last year. But, you mentioned Monk as a comparison. He actually, to me, he moves like Tyrese Maxey.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny because like Kentucky just like churns through these guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's a little blocky like Maxey was coming out of college, and even like Emmanuel Quickley coming out of college, a little blocky.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a bad thing. It's just that, you know, he doesn't have like what Monk has, a swivel in the hips. Fox has a swivel in the hips. Like these guys really, really move laterally. And so I like him. I think he's going to be a good player. But again, at 19 and a half years old, and after 1 year of college, you're still worried about like, okay, how long is it going to take him to get there? And
mm-hmm.
like he can be fun, and he can come in and he can average 8 points a game as a rookie, and like, oh, that was fun. Like that guy's going to be really good.
Mm-hmm.
But he's trying to replace a guy who averaged 15, and that's really tough. 15 and five.
Sure.
And so that's where I kind of like get a little bit of a holdup, because I think you can go out there and maybe use a second round pick to go get a guy who could fit in and has a couple of years of experience in the league and might be able to like jump in and help you more than a rookie at this position. I don't hate that idea if you know you're going to lose Monk. The problem is the draft is on the 26th.
Right.
Free agency starts the 30th. You might not fully know if you're losing Monk or not by draft night.
Yeah.
I mean, the Kings probably have asked, like, could you know, will you try your best to give us an answer before draft night?
Yeah.
So we can kind of plan accordingly. But that's the problem the Kings are in. They're in this really, really bad space where, just so people understand, they're already over the cap. They're at $150 million. I wrote on this that'll come out on the Kings beat later today. Like, they're at $150 million in cap space.
Mm.
They're already like $9 million over the cap. So if they lose Monk, they don't have whatever Monk made to go out and use.
Right.
They have their mid-level exception, which is $12.9 million, which can go get them a very good player. They might be able to get an equivalent or maybe a player that just plays a different position, but that can give you that.
Right.
So that's one thing, right? And then they also have trades, and they have all these other things that they can do. But like just the idea of losing Monk at this point would be pretty catastrophic, because we're talking about, there's a big difference between a $12 to $13 million player in the league mm-hmm. and a $17 to $25 million player, which is who Malik Monk is at this point. Mm-hmm. And so trying to find that replacement, that perfect fit to change everything is going to be a lot more difficult. I would rather have Malik Monk and decide whether I'm going to go hard cap myself using the mid-level exception mm-hmm. to go add another piece. But like it's complex, and that's why we keep talking about like the puzzle that's in front of them is so complicated, and mm-hmm. we don't know all the deals that have been offered to them or that they have offered to other teams. We also don't know how close somebody is to making a move with the Kings. Mm-hmm. It's very possible they already have like two deals lined up and they're gonna like they'll be easy to move. We'll see it very quickly on draft day. We'll start hearing things like this is gonna happen. But you have to remember these things are fluid, and we went through this a couple of years ago when the Kings had Buddy Hield traded on draft night for Kyle Kuzma and Montrezl Harrell. Mm-hmm. They had him traded that morning, and then the Lakers went a different direction. They
that was crazy.
The Wizards swooped in and offered Russell Westbrook, and
that was nuts.
And things changed quickly.
That's something we've talked about before with Malik Monk, though. If they do lose him, finding the direct, hey, here's a player who averaged 15-5, and he's just going to be the next Malik Monk, is not going to be super easy. And no. It might mean taking a flyer on a couple of veterans the same way Malik Monk was and say, hey, let's hope that they can develop in this role. I don't think it's going to be that straightforward where they go, oh, we lost Malik Monk. Okay, great. Now we'll just go get this player. And that's why I think if you know, like let's just say by draft night, they know Malik Monk is gone. He's like, hey, I'm getting word that I'm going to get $25 million from Orlando, and if that's the case, then I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
Then that's why I don't hate the idea of going and getting Rob Dillingham, because you can go sign a couple of I don't know, like I'm going to say mid-level veterans, mm-hmm. not rotational players, rotational pieces is the word I was looking for. You could now go get a couple rotational pieces that I think can allow Dillingham to kind of come along, and maybe he's not Malik Monk this year, but in the aggregate, Dillingham with whatever those pieces are can kind of recreate that production.
No, I like your idea there. Again, I think when you're trying to build a team, there are all of these complexities. But I also think that when you get to draft night,
mm-hmm.
the value of the 13th pick versus drafting it mm-hmm. might just be too enticing for the Kings. And
yeah.
and that's where, like, if you're looking at all of the Kings' assets,
mm-hmm.
they have the 13th pick in the 2024 draft, which they can trade on draft night, not officially, and he can't be officially traded until after the moratorium on July 6th, but
sure.
you can trade him on draft night. We mm-hmm. all know you'll draft a player for another team and you'll mm-hmm. trade him, right? Well, like the way that if you're going to make that move, you have to decide right then, like, is this player going to help me now or is it going to help me down the road? And the other problem the Kings have is that the 25 and 26 picks are tied up. You can't do anything with them. Mm-hmm. And even the 27th pick has got to have like an asterisk next to it. So what you have to offer on draft night, if you're going to not trade the 2024 pick, the 13th pick mm-hmm. in this year's draft, if you're not going to trade that, you're going to draft somebody. The best you can offer somebody is 2027, 2029, 2031. That's a long way away for some of these teams.
Yeah.
And some of these teams are like, look, we're not willing to wait that long to see what those picks look like.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they are. Maybe there's a team that goes, oh, yeah, but man, I'm going to take a 2029 pick from the Kings because you're doing the math, like when is Fox, when is Sabonis mm-hmm. going to start to slide?
Mm-hmm.
2031, heck yeah, I'll take that pick.
Yeah.
Right? But now you're projecting out like way far away. If you need something immediate, if you're hoping to start your build now, that's where the 13th pick has like a lot more value. A mm-hmm. team like the Hawks might be starting over. A team like the Wizards are like in a bad spot and need to get better, right? But
mm-hmm.
or they need to get worse to get better. They need to go get more picks. They need mm-hmm. to go add another lottery pick. That's where I think the Kings will prey is on teams that are looking to take a step back to get better, and the 13th pick is a lot more enticing than
sure.
a 27, a 29, or a 31 today.
How valuable would it be for the Kings to pick up a 2025 2025 pick?
A 2025 pick is pretty valuable because that, well, a 2026 pick is more valuable to them.
Why?
Because if you have a 2026 pick, that means that you can for sure trade your 2027 because you're guaranteed to have a 2026. Because as of right now, the Kings aren't guaranteed to have either a 25 or a 26.
So you could trade 26 and 27?
No, but you can trade 27 outright without having an asterisk next to it.
Oh, I see. Okay.
As of right now, if the Kings somehow...
If that pick doesn't convey in 25 and goes to 26, isn't it second round picks?
No, in 26, it's a first round pick. If that doesn't convey, it's top 10 protected. If it doesn't convey in 2026...
The Hawks from the Herder trade.
It becomes the 2027 second rounder and a 2027 second rounder. 26 and 27 second rounders. So as of right now, the Kings can't trade their 2026 or 2027 second round picks because of that trade.
Got it.
But if somehow they don't make the playoffs the next 2 years and then they fall... again, it's top 10 protected. So if they fall outside of the top 10 and that pick does convey, then they can't trade the next year's pick.
I see.
Ahead of time. They can trade it on draft night, what we're talking about right now.
But we're worried about future assets to make a deal now.
Yes, exactly. Future assets to make a deal
now. So it's not... So on draft night, let's say they decide to trade back. We've talked about that idea. And the reason I talk about picking players here is just trying to explore the space of possibilities on draft night. I think they're going to trade the pick. I don't think they're going to use it.
I agree.
So that's on the... But again, we're trying to explore all these different possibilities. So is it then... Would it be... How am I trying to say this? Would it be valuable then to move back if it means picking up a 26 pick because then it makes it easier in the trade market to go make a deal?
Yeah, if you could take your 2024 pick, the number 13 pick, and say slide back to the 24-25 spot in the draft, which is...
Bobby Clintman range.
Yeah, same team has exactly. Same team has both of those picks.
Sure.
But stick with me. If you're able to trade back like 10-12 spots... and pick up a future 2026 first round pick. And that 2026 can be like some sort of weird protected pick, or it could be a pick that, you know, let's say it's a Bucks pick, or it's a really good team's pick and you're not expecting that to be a great pick. That doesn't matter. The fact if you can add a 2026 allows you to clearly trade your 2027, but also if you get to a point where, let's say you do convey your 2025 pick, and you're not allowed to trade the consecutive picks, now you can because you have two. You have two 2026 picks.
Sure.
And so now things get... And that matters because if you've already traded your 2027, now you got two 2026. Like it gets a little dicey on what you can trade and what you can't trade.
Sure.
Because again, you wouldn't be able to trade a 2026 if you've already traded your 2027 unless you add a second pick. This is complicated.
Boy.
And that's why I keep saying, like, it's such a, like, giant puzzle.
Right. There's not one straightforward, like, here's the very obvious, do X, Y, and Z.
Yeah, because if you're Monty McNair, you have to say, okay, look, I don't like the value I'm getting for the 13th. Let's just say this plays out. He doesn't like the value that teams are offering for the 13th pick in this year's draft. But there is other value that you can get by still not drafting that pick. So if you don't like the value of the player that you might get, let's say you had your eyes set on somebody and he's not there anymore, right? And then you get to your pick and you're like, okay, I really don't want to take an 18, 19-year-old and roll the dice and see how they work out. It might be smart to move back, get a pick in this year's draft, and then a 2026 pick. So that opens up things down the road. But then also, that doesn't mean you can't trade your 2024, the pick that you get. You move back 8 picks or 10 picks. Somebody else is excited about a player that's there. You go, okay, it doesn't have the same value as a 13th pick, but a 2024 24th pick or 25th pick might have enough value to get you a player that you want.
Right.
And so that's how you might be able to kind of stack up your assets and start building something else. So it's complicated, but like, again, there's like probably six whiteboard scenarios that they have them all like in a room. Like, okay, if this happens, this happens. If this happens, this happens. You have to sit there at 13 and go, okay, I don't know if I want to trade 13 because what if a player we believe is the next Tyrese Halliburton falls to 13 and we scouted him, but we don't think it's going to happen. But then on draft night, it does happen. And you're like, okay, now we have to be fluid. We've got to be able to move.
Right.
So yeah, it's like being a GM would not like, especially in the next week and a half, 2 weeks, like this is making or breaking someone's career.
Yes.
Like there's a good chance this will make or break the Kings portion of somebody's career.
Yeah. Man.
Tough.
And there's not, it's got to get better. That's it.
There it is.
The bottom line. Whatever, however it shakes out, the roster has to look better going into this year than it did coming out of last year. All right. That's James. I'm Kyle. We got a whole second hour coming up. We got more Kings. We'll have the handoff with one of D'Lo or Casey. I think it's a KC day today. We'll have some good idea or bad idea. And the Ringer's NBA Top 100 final rankings for 2023-2024 are out. Can't wait to get to those as well on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work, both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.